Good evening. This is Mae Brussel for KAZUFM, Pacific Grove, California. It is broadcast number 580, December the 17th, 1983. When Pope John Paul II was shot in May 1981, just 2 months after Ronald Reagan was shot in the United States, I did a several-part broadcast, part one and two, on the shooting of John Paul, and then updated information during the year since 1981. I'm going to continue where I left off on the shooting of the Pope, marking this broadcast John Paul III, because for the next two or three weeks, I'm going into the relationship of the shooting of John Paul II, the attempted murder, or the propaganda that accompanied the attempted murder, to various events that are taking place that I have discussed through the years on this program, and point out the parallels and the names of people involved that have played a big role in other murder assassinations and their interlocking connections. Now, when the Pope was shot on the broadcast May 17th, 1981, that was program number 493. We're up to 580 now. I asked the question, why would anybody want to shoot John Paul II? What are the motives? And as you know, the major news medias are the accepted sources of information through television and radio and newspaper don't very often ask the question. They began looking into the background of Ajah, the man who shot the Pope and was taken right away to the jail. But I tried to analyze who would attempt to shoot the head of the Catholic Church at that particular time, and for what reasons? And I listed five motives, and you can see how close I was to that a year and a half ago, 1 week after the attempt on the life of the Pope. It was less than a week. It was just the same few days within the week. Number one, would it be Muslim versus the Christian war? Would the Muslims, because of certain positions the Vatican was taking, send a man like Ajah, who right away was identified as training in Lebanon PLO camps and with the radical terrorists and in hiding out after he escaped from Turkey, would they, the PLO, have him shoot the Pope? The answer was a categorical no. I doubt that seriously. The Pope recognized the PLO in the Middle East. He has never acknowledged the existence of Israel to this day. You saw him recently with a picture of Arafat entertained at the Vatican. The PLO and the IRA and the Pope are all on the same side, so there would be no reason for the PLO or the Lebanese terrorist, unless it would be the Falange Christian terrorist who had a reason to cooperate in training Ajah, just as he belonged to the right wing in Turkey. The second question, would it be the far, far right, more fascist than most military governments today, referring to organizations like the Masonic Lodge that surfaced at the same week the Pope was shot, the P2 secret organization, the links going back to Mussolini and Hitler and Franco, and the network of Skorzeny Odessa? Would it be the far right who want no interference with a possible bloodbath in Central America? Now, a year ago, May, it was 81, I said that we will have a bloodbath in El Salvador, Honduras, Cuba, Nicaragua, and Guatemala. And did they want a certainty that a pope who was more along with the lines that would accept this bloodbath as the pope? Pacelli accepted the bloodbath in Spain and Guernica and the concentration camps in Poland and Yugoslavia and the Ustashi, and I don't have to list it all for you. Did they want somebody who would come in and cover their bases farther? And it seems now that this pope is expressing, as I mentioned last week, that atomic bombs are evil and the genetic banks, the sperm banks, the Nobel banks are like Nazi Germany. So maybe even though he's a far-right pope, he gave some inklings that given the position of pope, he could alter his views once he was in office. And did they want to make sure by May 81 that he would not interfere with the process of wiping out to a feudal state the bloodbath in Central America, which is in fact taking place today? The United States government just raised the money for weapons to Guatemala, and they're very nicely committing genocide, as are our other allies over there in American-trained soldiers. The third possible motive was the Protestant versus Catholic, the power of the Pope. That's the Carl McIntyre group from Texas and Florida and the Sun Belt, who have a dislike of the popularity of John Paul II and the traditional Protestant versus Catholic conflict. John Hinckley Jr. and Mr. Richardson, another fellow that was arrested, that was following Jody Foster and was linked to John Hinckley, were part of that McIntyre group. They worked with Nazis in this country that were not necessarily Catholic, that were Protestant. But the third reason there, I said, I doubt that. If they shot one pope, they would get another one. It wouldn't be that easy, and the policies wouldn't be any different. So the Protestants aren't about to shoot a pope any more than the PLO, who works with the PLO. Now, the fourth motive was interference with Turkish politics. They had a coup in 1980 that is far right now, but the United States and the NATO countries that work closely with the Italian government and with the Vatican put down the growing of poppies, along with Michael Sindona and Richard Nixon. This was part of their policy. The Vatican links to NATO, and Ronald Reagan and Alexander Haig, and Licio Gelli was at Reagan's inauguration just 5 months earlier. They are trying to direct the Turkey politics and divide the Turks against the Muslims. That's part of their crusade. And there could have been a reason why the far-right Turkish people don't want the Vatican interfering and breaking up the Muslim relationships. And point four of this, I said this economic factor is strong when you link it to number five, which is the narcotic war. Now, Pat Roberts of the 700 Club was doing his usual television this week, and a long subscriber to World Watchers told me that he has flown over to Lebanon to meet with Mr. Jamal for the purpose of setting up antennas and radios, and that he wants to turn the whole world Christian and wipe out the Muslim religion. And he's over there working with the Christian Falange in Lebanon. Now, Mr. Roberts worked for J. Peter Grace of Peru, and J. Peter Grace and the Grace family are higher echelon of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta that was just recognized as a separate entity by Rome this past week, elevated like the Opus Dei. So J. Peter Grace is a high Catholic representative of the Vatican, of the notorious Opus Dei, the lay group that I keep saying wants to take us back to the Inquisition because the Reformation brings liberals such as the anti-atomic bomb bishops and so forth, or even communism. So J. Peter Grace worked for Pat Roberts, or still could, or get his money. I think these radio Christian shows are funded by this Nazi money that is salted away. And he's over there with the Christian Falange trying to arrange ways to do away with the Muslims. So that, in fact, a year and a half later, supports what I figured out was a possible reason for Ajah being used to wipe out the Pope at that time and getting somebody not so hard on the Muslims, breaking them up. The fifth reason was the narcotic war. And of course, this was a year and a half ago that I was earmarking this, and I have files here to share, and I'm sure you're reading them, of the arrest in Milan and the links to London and links to the organizations in Bulgaria and in Turkey that pour heroin and narcotics into Germany and into the United States and into Europe, but use those Eastern countries. Now, the narcotic war goes like this. Richard Nixon, as the President of the United States, worked closely with the Shah of Iran and Alexander Haig and the old Watergate team. And what they did, they tied off the Turkish heroin and made the farmer poor. And what they did, they didn't stop heroin in this traffic, but they directed the heroin to a different area. And they didn't want the Turks to be rich with the money. They moved it to Iran so that the Southeast Asian heroin and narcotics, opium, coming out of Indochina and Indonesia would go up to Saigon and into Marseille and into Europe, where the opium was filtered and made into blocks and then shipped to the United States and all over America, all over the world. But in America, we're hit hard. Our every city is practically owned by the mob and mob control. And Ajah grew up in the area of a person, a farmer, where all the farmers were poor because of the decisions of the Vatican working Michael Sindona and the Vatican was common knowledge by the time that Aja was used for this assassination attempt was directly linked to the Nixon administration, later the Reagan administration, and the want to grow their own poppies, because what we did, we made Shah and the Shah family rich and directed the flow to the people we wanted to have the money who would put it in the Chase Manhattan Bank, and then there's politics and heroin, and so one group is cut off. Now, we're doing this at the present time, the Ronald Reagan administration, the parallel where he acts like in Fort Lauderdale, the Colombian cocaine is the biggest thing going in the world. But he's allowing the Japanese mafia through marriages with Reverend Moon. I understand they're pouring into these ridiculous, they're not marriages at all, but the Japanese mafia and the Hong Kong mafia are buying up this country, coming in from that end. So Ronald Reagan's administration with Attorney General William French Smith and Paul Laxalt is not anti-drug. It's where do you bring it in to make the most profits and who do you cut off so that those farmers don't have it. Now, those were the motives that I listed in May 1981 and felt that it had more to do with the Turkish politics with NATO and Reagan and Haig, with the far right, and also possibly wanting a pope that they would be assured would not speak up when the bloodbath came. And then the next week, May 24th, 1981, on broadcast 494, I talked about the police looking into a second gun in Rome. Two men were arrested. One was involved, part of a Rome right-wing group. This was written in the Night News Service in May of 81. A mysterious break from poverty and isolation Aja had to a technical school in Ankara in Turkey. Thousands were recruited by extremist groups, neo-Nazi groups in the early 60s. 2,000 right-wing extremists escaped from prison. He belonged to the Grey Wolves organization, a bloody terror pact called a League of Idealist Youth, the UGD. This pact was founded by the Central Intelligence Agency with their manuals in 1969, and the plans were to regain the Ottoman Empire lost in World War I, the territory in the Middle East, and this would go again into the Pat Roberts radio station towers and working with Jamal and the Christians setting a base in the Middle East. Those were subjects that I brought up a year and a half ago. Now the news stories are trying to swing to the belief that a Bulgarian KGB conspiracy was behind the shooting of the Pope. The newspapers are filled with stories accusing the Bulgarian communists of being behind the Pope, and I'll cite some of those articles with you and take you through them in a chronological order, so that you can understand, and then going on to the narcotics connections and the arms smuggling and the real role that Aja had with the people that he worked with, exposed in 1981. Why at this time are they pulling out a KGB story and trying to make it wash? I briefly mentioned it last week. Now, the script goes like this over in the Middle East. Ever since 1970, the Vatican, as exposed in a book, The Vatican Connections, just this year, Paul Marcinkus, the man who wasn't made the cardinal last week, John Connolly, part of the CIA foundations in Houston, Texas, and the United States were involved in counterfeit, $1 billion stock counterfeit to put money into the Vatican. Michael Sindona was arrested along with David Chairman, David Kennedy, chairman of Continental Illinois Bank. And they worked together, and Richard Nixon, as I mentioned last week, was the attorney for Michael Sindona. Now, when Sindona was arrested for bank failure here, he fled to Italy. He pretended he was kidnapped, and they asked him to leave the country while the Pope visited the United States. The Pope was coming here for his great photographic, remember the visit with all the clouds and the capes and kissing the ground and the masses of people, carefully staged visit. The trip was arranged by Licio Gelli, who fled the country and is now arrested in Switzerland, and Italy is afraid to bring him back. When Sindona fled there, not only was Licio Gelli arranging it, but Carlo Gambino family, the organized crime fascist group that have strong links in the United States. And then Sindona came home and went to jail, where he's serving time in jail. That's God's banker. But starting in 1979, this is 2 years before the Pope was shot, There were investigations in New York City, tape recordings, and studies in around the world about missing money in the Vatican, and everywhere they investigated the crime investigation, it was leading to Rome and to the Vatican. So by May 13, 1981, at the time the Pope was shot, the Vatican Bank was being drawn into connections to the mob, to the Bahamas banks, to offshore banking, to Panamanian investments, and may have been that, as he realized, the Polish Pope, what he was being swept into with Paul Marcinkus, they had or tried to kill him and used a member of the Mafia whose money and sources of funds comes from those offshore bankings. So, but the Pope survived, and a day later, Aja said, within a year, if they don't rescue me, they plan to rescue me, I'll be out. Within a year, I'll talk if I can get a lighter sentence. And they promised him a lighter sentence. So what he's done in a year is change it from what he said a year ago to a KGB Bulgarian story. And they nicely arranged that he did meet Bulgarians. He never knew their name or anything about them. So the Nixon-Sedona connections had tied up the Turkish heroin traffic. It left the profits to go to other countries, in Indonesia and Southeast Asia, the French connection, the Korean connection. And the time that the assassination attempt took place, it would, in fact, be a reason to want the Pope shot because of the Vatican links to the mob and the Mafia. That it's not so strange when Roberta Calvi is about to tell about the Vatican money and the offshore banking, and he's the banker for the Vatican, and he's hung in London in June 18th this year, just when he's about to testify. So you can shoot Roberta Calvi or Mr. John Rosselli or Sam Giancana and primary witnesses that I talk about all the time, Kevin McCullough with the Edwin Wilson case. Primary witnesses are off all the time, so why wouldn't the Pope be off? Now, I mentioned last week briefly the article, and I want to just refer to it again because it has a continuity to the rest of the next few weeks' broadcast. The one by Alexander Coburn, I won't give him the other name this time, I did it last week, November 30th, 1982, in the Village Voice. There were a lot of articles on the death of Grace Kelly. It is right to question Grace Kelly's death. The car was immediately taken away with a tarp and covered over. She wasn't given a brain scan. Her family was told not to come. It wasn't serious, and she was in a deep coma. She didn't have the body examined by outside people who are taken to a hospital that treats these kinds of things. A witness was there at the time and then drove away. There were a lot of questions about Grace, and they were written up in the National Enquirer and into various newspapers, The Star and The Globe. And when Charles Coburn was reading Cliff Leindecker's story, which he admitted had a wealth of interesting circumstantial detail, when he noticed that Mae Bressel wrote it, our old friend, an assassination buff, at that point he said he put it down. He was pleased I was working on Grace, but he didn't want to read any more. Now, this comment is so typical of people who are doing excellent work but won't pull their energies, and this is a problem. I don't know whether it's machoism, where a woman isn't supposed to figure this out, whether she beats you to the story, where you don't take seriously these things until after they happen and analyze them, but I don't understand what his thinking is. I called him in New York and spoke with him, and he apologized. He said, I did take a little snap at you or swipe at you. I said, well, why do you do it? You've done it before. What is it you're doing? You know, he wrote a remark about up the Maypole when I was on WBAI with New York for 3 years with this same program. And what took me off the program was not making fun of Nixon and Watergate. That was fair play. But when I linked it to Reinhard Gehlen and Hitler's chief of intelligence and Himmler and Bormann and Mengele's and the Nazis that came into this country, and that was 1976, that was 6 years before John Loftus even whispered it on 60 Minutes, they took it off the air. We couldn't make the Nazi connections and let the people in New York figure it out for themselves. I can do it out here in California and other stations, but he was instrumental in writing in The Voice, you know, up the Maypole, how can you have May on WBAI? And so I called him and talked with him and said, I'm going to come see you. He said, you're not going to New York all the way to see me. I said, I'm going to come see you, and I want to understand why you have the necessity. The Village Voice has had magnificent articles on Menachem Begin and the brown shirts and training with Mussolini. and working in the Polish Nazi regime. I never would have had it from any other source. He's done wonderful articles on the Nugent Handbag, a wonderful one long article, and wonderful story on the background of for Albert Einstein warning the Israeli people, the Palestinians and the Israelis, don't ever let a man like Menachem Begin work his way up in the government. So I pulled out just one article to copy to send to Coburn. It's from the Los Angeles Times, May 31st. The Masons have everything else. Why not topple the Italian government? And it's how the Masonic Lodge, that secret P2, is written by George Armstrong. Many of you remember it. It's off of Rome, Italy's colossal new cast of 1,000 Scandal. The P2 Masonic Lodge leaves many here with ambivalent feelings. There's never been a similar scandal in the world. The Italian reaction to the scandal has people with a long Roman Catholic tradition and a long tradition of anti-clericalism trying to size up in a nutshell. It's big enough to contain a synopsis of the P2 scandal. Here are the essentials. The Grand Orient Masonic Lodge, a very particular lodge called Propaganda 2, was set up and placed in the hands of Licio Gelli. No regular meetings, no one ever met. Cream of the Italian establishment, industrialists, generals, opinion makers of the media. The venerable master reaches them by phone or letter. He's been charged with criminal association, espionage, industrial secrets, files on 30,000 people in public life. He's been running this for 15 years. Gelli's background includes fighting with the Nazis against Italian resistance, engineering boats, with people that were Nazis, the return of Juan Perón to Argentina. He commutes between Monte Carlo and Switzerland. The police raided his villa last March and got the list of his members, 953, many of them from NATO, and Alexander Haig was the head of NATO, Italian admiral, generals, civilian coordinators of the Secret Service. Licio Gelli was the head of this. It was a first attempt since Greece to put a Nazi Mussolini-Hitler government into power, and they've been working since 1947 with the Central Intelligence Agency. And Licio Gelli, when he fled Italy, he lived in Monte Carlo. Now, when I was working on the story of Grace Kelly and the Propaganda Do and the Masonic Lodge and the Masonic Lodge in Monte Carlo of Alexander Haig and Henry Kissinger being members, there was a lot of reason to know that what was going on in the Vatican included a whole list of 8 or 10 deaths at the time when Grace Kelly was in there, allegedly for the purpose of making that simpy movie I saw at Christmas time. We'll get another one at Easter. But she traveled back and forth in Rome at the time that these scandals were going on in this summer, just weeks after Licio Gelli was murdered and the Vatican Monte Carlo money was tied up and lost. The lodges are going broke and her husband's desperate. Grace Kelly worked with all of these people from the Opus Dei, and is Opus Dei, represents the monarchy and the lay Catholics who arranged her marriage. And I bring this at length because there is no reason at all for Coburn or the Village Voice to be so smug about it. And it's really a tragedy because you can expect it by some people, but there are others that I would wish that they would be a little more inquisitive when they go out attacking people doing research like myself or other people. But putting that aside, Alexander Coburn came out with this story. I mentioned before, if you send a self-addressed stamped envelope, I'll copy and send it to you if you don't have it from the Village Voice. This is January the 4th, 1983, and I usually, before I go on a program, if you ever noticed, I'll spend 3 or 4 hours on one article outlining it, and I go down the points. It may look casual, and I don't read a script. Many articles I'll spend 3 or 4 hours doing just that, to share with you and paraphrase it so that it isn't just read on the air. But this particular article, once in a blue moon, an article comes out that makes a new breakthrough. And I'm going to take it and read it with you and analyze it with you if it takes the remainder of the hour, because it is so essential to the whole era. It's called The Pope, Lumumba, and the Kalb Connections, and it's a brilliant article. Insiders and intelligence experts, according to Coburn, are talking on 7 continents, and you better believe one of them is Antarctica, to what they call the CALB, the K-A-L-B connections. This is a tangled one. The CALBs are Madeline CALB, who's married to Marvin CALB, and Marvin and Bernard CALB are brothers. The CALB connection. This is a tangled story from the jungles of Congo to the expensive world of TV network. Network TV, that rotten stuff. To the corridors of the Vatican itself. From the Congo to the news media, that electric eye, the NBC and the CBS that you watch so well, and ABC. This particular story is about NBC and CBS. We can take on ABC later. The story starts in early 1961. That's 1 year, 2 years before John Kennedy was murdered, and he was just in office and took oath, when the African nationalist Patrice Lumumba, the first premier of the Congo, was murdered. Lumumba was delivered, bound hand and foot, to his most deathly foe, Mr. Shambe, Belgian pawn and leader of the secessionist movement in the province of Katanga. The copper there is rich, Congolese money, and they had to arrange the murder of Shambe. The trail is tangled. It stretches from their bars to the closed doors of the CIA in Langley, Virginia. Keep in mind, this is an article about the propaganda on the shooting of the Pope. That's what we're going to, the Pope, Lumumba, and CALB. The path leads to the CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia. The players are a bald general, a young lieutenant, and a red-robed cardinal. It was President Eisenhower, John Kennedy, the new president, and Cardinal Spellman. Joe Kennedy was a member of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta. John and Robert were not initiated yet. They hadn't yet proved their real loyalty to the Vatican. If they were real loyal to the Vatican, they would have invaded Cuba and given the royalty, the syndicate, the mobs of prostitution, the liquor, the whole gambling syndicate. They would turn it over to Batista, and then the profits would go to Rome. Kennedy denied them those little profits, so they had to build up the Paradise Island and the other islands down in that area. Now, this story says Lumumba was the Castro of Africa. His speeches gave shocks of horrors to the Belgian copper barons. Now, those are the same ITT Anaconda copper barons in Chile. These were the Belgian copper barons. The John McCone of the CIA was on the board of ITT, and Richard Helms and Henry Kissinger said Allende isn't acceptable to the copper barons in the United States at the time of Allende's murder, and the Belgians told the CIA it's not acceptable to have Shambe there because you can't have labor and raise the price of workers in the copper fields and make a profit. So you have to cut the leaders and the idealistic leaders who would take their people out of imperialism and draw them more to a socialism where they can support themselves. In this meeting, the copper barons meet. He says, the titans of U.S. capitalism, the South African mining magnates, who had watched with outrage what Castro had done in Havana. Did Eisenhower, who ordered the CIA to overthrow Guatemala and take out Arbenz in 1954, give the nod to CIA Allen Dulles to get rid of Lumumba at all costs? Of course. And of course, in 1947, the first test was Mossadegh, kicked out, and the Shah of Iran put on. Allen Dulles and Ike gave the go-ahead, get rid of Lumumba. It looks that way, said an intelligence expert, told the Village Voice last week. And also the House investigated the assassinations and had fingers on the murder down there. And there's quite at length the orders and the desire to kill Shambi. Okay, the complex web gets more tangled. Eisenhower may have nodded, but when he left the White House, Lumumba was still alive. Replacing him was the hyper-charismatic John Kennedy, and in the first weeks of his power, the sinister, charming CIA chief presented him with plans long nourished. You have to invade Cuba and overthrow Castro, and you have to make Mobutu, our client in the Congo, a CIA client, and get rid of Shambe. Now, these were the orders John Kennedy got when he first went into office. Assenting to the invasion of Cuba, Kennedy some say, flinched at the Mobutu plan. Nothing was said, but he knew that he would be signing Lumumba's death warrant. And here the mystery gets deeper. And remember, when John Kennedy was murdered for not going into Cuba and taking orders on killing Castro, Alan Dulles, who ordered him to invade Cuba, had just been fired by John Kennedy shortly before the invasion, because he said, or right after, rather, the embarrassment, there's a hidden government behind my back. And he was so distraught by the CIA ordering him on what he had to do that he had fired Alan Dulles. And then Alan Dulles was put on the Warren Commission. He fired him after the Bay of Pigs invasion, and he pulled back. And then Dulles was put on the Warren Commission. And meanwhile, John McCone from the Atomic Energy Commission and Bechtel McCone, and representing then ITT, was the director of the CIA. Now, Coburn says, here's where the mystery deepens. According to a Newsweek article going back to May 1961, that was 2 years before the Kennedy assassination, in May of 1961, killed just before press time, Cardinal Spellman, in Newsweek, they said, and somebody picked up that the story was in the file, the Boneyard, but it wasn't printed, made a dramatic top-secret nighttime visit to the White House to implore Kennedy to back Mobutu, which would be to approve of Lumumba's death. I'll take a break now and turn this tape over, because 1/2 hour is over, and I don't want to cut short this article, and then we'll continue with it on side 2 of this tape.